And we turn now to one of the biggest stories that came out during the war in Iraq. Jessica Lynch, as we all know by now, was a soldier who was ambushed and taken captive by the Iraqis back in March. Initial reports said she fought valiantly and killed several of her Iraqi assailants. There were also reports that she was stabbed and shot multiple times and then mistreated at the hospital where she was taken. Here's Washington Post reporter Peter Baker describing the scene told to him by Mohammed, the man who discovered Lynch's whereabouts and reported it to the Marines.
He started asking questions, and a doctor friend of his told him that there was an American soldier being held there. The doctor friend took him to see the soldier. Turned out to be 19-year-old Jessica Lynch. He saw her through a window, a glass pane. One of Saddam Saddam was roughing her up, slapped her twice with his hand, once with the open palm, the second time with the back of his hand. That was just too much for Mohammed the Bear.
Now, it appears some of these events may not have happened. Dana Priest joins us now. She's national security reporter for The Washington Post. She helped write today's story in The Post, which tries to clear up some of the confusion. She joins us from The Washington Post studio here in Washington. And good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be here, Neil.
The Post was among the news organizations first to report this story, the version of which now is being disputed. So let's try to clear up some of the facts. What do we know for sure about what happened to Jessica Lynch?
For sure. Well, we know for sure that the convoy was lost, and the reason that it was lost was in part because it was a very long convoy, gotten out of radio contact, did not get the word that everybody else had changed directions, and they made several wrong turns. They had to turn around these huge vehicles. A couple of them broke down, including Jessica's Lynch's Humvee. She had to hop inside of another Humvee. And then more to the point of your question, I think, we know now that her injuries, most of her injuries, came when her Humvee crashed into a upturned U.S. Truck that had jackknifed when it tried to get around a roadblock the Iraqis had set up using a dump truck. So doctors now believe, and this was something they couldn't determine right away because of the extent of her injuries and broken bones, that most of her injuries were sustained during the accident. She was not shot and she was not stabbed. Whether she fired...
I was just going to say the story about her emptying her M16 at the on-charging Iraqis.
They believe that that is not entirely true, and it remains slightly murky, but what they believe is that before she got into the Humvee, she, like the other soldiers, were firing back at the Iraqis, who were firing from both sides with various types of ammunition and mortars and this sort of thing, and that she did try to fire, but her M16 jammed. And she didn't fire probably when she was in the Humvee, although they can't say for certain because everybody who was in there with her was dead, and she apparently has not talked to them about that because either she doesn't want to or she cannot recall it. So chances are that she didn't fire, and chances are that she did not kill Iraqis. We can't say for 100% certainty, but it looks like the preponderance of evidence, which is, I think, all we'll be able to say about that, shows that that was not true either.
We're talking about Jessica Lynch with Dana Priest of The Washington Post. When we come back from a break, we'll take some of your phone calls. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We'll try to decipher how the story of the apparently incorrect story about what happened to Jessica Lynch, how that came to dominate the news in the American media. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow we'll re-examine the execution of Ethel and Julius Rosenberg 50 years later. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today we're talking with Dana Priest, national security reporter for The Washington Post, about what we know and don't know about the Jessica Lynch story. And if you have questions for our guest, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And Dana, before the break, we were talking about what you've uncovered in the course of this investigation, you and your colleagues at the Post, about the injuries that were caused in an accident during the attack by Iraqi troops, and the fact that probably Jessica Lynch was not the second coming of Audie Murphy, not that anybody should have expected her to be that. But nevertheless, the Washington Post and National Public Radio and many other news outlets reported a very heroic version of the story. How did that come to be?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I think all the soldiers in this convoy did heroic things, as far as I can tell. This was, they were taking a great amount of gunfire. Some of them risked their lives to save others. And we haven't yet been privileged to get a fuller version of the convoy incident. But how they came to be is very simple, actually, in our case, which is a number of reporters, when we learned of this, pulsed our own sources, people that we believe are credible and that have access to the sort of information that you would rely on in the very first instance to figure this out, which means intelligence information. And that's what we did. Three of us, in fact, gathered the information that made our story and which said she might have been shot and stabbed and she fired off all her rounds. And these were people who we trusted over the months and years that we've dealt with them, and they were reading from classified, in most cases, classified intelligence reports. They were initial reports from the field that were both intercepted or eavesdropped conversations with Iraqi soldiers, in which these soldiers were talking to one another through their cell phones or radio system, saying that there was a white female who was acting very brave and fighting them. And we went back several times to those sources and repeated to find out the reliability of that. They thought it was pretty good, although still initial. Same with the stabbing and wounding. You were getting a lot of eyewitnesses on the ground as well. Some of them we quoted in our story, too. She had been, her bones had been so badly shattered in some cases that they were actually protruding out of the skin. And so there were some blood marks on her skin that you would have been able to see if you had gotten up close, and perhaps that's why some people thought she was shot, but it could be other reasons as well. It is definitely, in that case, the fog of war and the fog of reporting during war, and I think that we made an effort to go back and say what really happened, because this story took on a life of its own, and the criticism of the Washington Post and others who used unnamed sources also took on a life of its own in a way. You saw later the criticism that this was somehow staged and managed by the Pentagon, which I do not think is the case.
Well, that's really getting to the issue of the rescue operation, and that involves, as your story tells us, she was first taken by the Iraqis to one hospital inside Nasiriyah, and then to another hospital, the Saddam Hussein Hospital, where eventually she was rescued from. There was little doubt, your story leaves, that that hospital was being used, as so many hospitals were in Iraq, as a military command center. All kinds of military units were operating out of there, and there was all kinds of military paraphernalia, weapons and communications gear, and a sand table, as I recall, as well. Yet when the rescue mission arrived, all of those troops had left.
Right, and I think that's their good luck that they had. And in that case, no one got hurt, but they didn't know who had left. They had seen, I believe they had seen many people who could be described as military leaving the day before. They were using the Predator unmanned aerial vehicle to spy on the hospital, as well as they had several informants, including one Iraqi spy who worked for the CIA who was willing to carry a concealed camera into the hospital and film Jessica Lynch. She was sitting in her bed drinking water, and that was done as a triple check on, is this a trap? And that, again, speaks to the fact that they thought and planned for the worst-case scenario. They also sent a Marine unit out to do a feint, and I think that that goes to the point that they were planning for the worst. They wanted people's attention to be diverted, and they used Marines to do that. And they went in and fired explosive charges that are meant to disorient people in a room so that they can't fire at you easily and that they lose their calm. And then that didn't happen. They found just civilians, and they were led to Jessica Lynch and brought her out and eventually let most of the civilians go back into the hospital.
Tell us a little bit about the unit that was involved in her rescue and how it came to be that it was filmed so that we could all later see it on TV.
Well, the covert unit, it's a very elite one. They don't actually even recognize that it exists, but it's called Task Force 20, and it includes mainly Army Delta Force members, you might know them from. So what it does is secret and remains that way. That's very much a part of that culture to keep it that way. But this being the 21st century, they carry cameras with them wherever they go, in part to learn lessons for themselves. But in this case, they made some of that footage available. And as the public relations, one public relations officer from Central Command told me, they were eager to get that film. It was edited when it came to them. When they saw it, they thought it told a certain part of the story. And then, as he said, it was such an awesome story that we didn't need to embellish it, which it was. And whether or not all those things happened to her, she still is the one survivor out of that clump of the 18-vehicle convoy who survived. The convoy split into three separate parts. One part drove to safety, another was rescued by the Marines, and then everybody else in Jessica Lynch's convoy was killed or taken captive.
So the rest of the POWs that were captive were not with Lynch then?
No, they were not. They were the ones that released later on, and so she was found in the hospital only with the bodies of 11 other soldiers.
They were buried. They weren't in the hospital. They'd been most of them buried just outside. This email question from Ann McCarter, echoing many that we've gotten from listeners and a lot of our phone calls. Why isn't Lynch herself setting the record straight on all of the questions surrounding her capture, injuries, and treatment?
I think there are several reasons for that. And to tell you the truth, we don't know exactly which one would be predominant, but they are. She maintains that she doesn't have a recollection, a memory of certain parts of her captivity. And secondly, whether you believe that or not, she's not speaking about certain parts of her captivity. She also, her family has now in their employ a entertainment lawyer, and as we read today or this week, many news organizations are going after them, trying to get them to do books and movies. So I think they are going to wait and tell their story in that form. But thirdly, I think there is a privacy issue here. This is one individual soldier who we do believe was mistreated in some way, although we can't say exactly how. Whether she wants to say exactly how will be a question for her, but I do think privacy issues, and that's one reason the Army has not addressed this, are a concern. The Army does consider that their individual soldiers have a level of privacy at some point, and they usually do respect that.
Just in the short time we have left, there is a lot of this story we still don't know. Isn't that right?
You know, there ultimately is. We don't know the mistreatment. We don't know who might have inflicted it. We know that there's a criminal investigation, a war crimes investigation going on to perhaps find that out, which also indicates that others believe that such mistreatment of Lynch and others did occur. So we don't know that. We don't know exactly if she fired or whether the firing was of any consequence, because all the people in her vehicle were dead, and if she fired before that, we don't know exactly. I don't know now who might have witnessed that and what she said about that. So the preponderance of evidence says that no, she didn't, but we don't know for certain.
And once all of the excessively heroic statements, impressions were out there, do we know why CENTCOM or the Pentagon or the White House decided not to correct the record?
Well, I think two reasons. One is that it was such a positive story for them, and it was the media's mistake, if you want to read it that way, for going with unreliable information or information that turned out to be unreliable. So they may not have wanted to really correct the record in that regard. They did say some things that should have indicated to us that not everything was quite as we reported, but they usually said them on background. They never officially came out. And again, I think one of the reasons is the privacy issue. They didn't want to address certain things yet, and they are still involved in doing their own investigation of this. And that is not complete yet.
Dana Priest, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dana Priest is a national security reporter for The Washington Post. She was the lead reporter in today's story in The Post about soldier Jessica Lynch's ordeal in Iraq. She joined us from the Post studio in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.